Welcome to the latest edition of Business Matters. In today's programme, waiting patiently on opening time. Johnny McGuinness of McGuinness's Bar in Coldaff speaks of his frustration at having to keep his doors closed and the lack of guidance from government. And at your service, Annette Houston, Managing Director of FM Services Group, tells us how she has had to change the way her company operates since March. Back in 1994, Fintan and Mary Houston from Letterkenny decided to set up a cleaning business, FM Services. 26 years on, the company has continued to expand under the guidance of their daughter, Annette Houston, who joins us on Business Matters. Good morning, Annette, and you're welcome to the programme.
Morning, Kieran. How are you?
Can you take us back to the early stages of the company? I think FM Cleaning, if I'm not mistaken, was what it was called initially.
Yeah, FM Cleaning Contractors. So April 1994 would have been when the company was established.
Okay.
Quite a while ago now.
I know you had initially planned to go down maybe a different career path in electrical engineering.
But that, for myself, that, yes. In company was established, I was still at school. I was in fourth year at the time. So I worked part-time in the company, went to college in 95, I think it was, and studied electronic engineering at LYIT and had a few years there, and then went full-time in the business then just towards the end of college. Yeah, so around 97, I think I went full-time into the business at that stage. But it was there from it opened, like,
yeah,
as family businesses do.
Yeah, go back, back to the very early days, in terms of how it was established and why it was established. Obviously, your parents realised that there was an opening for the service they were providing.
Yeah, well, Mum had been cleaning, she had done, house cleaning part-time kind of for many years prior to that, and she was working in a local restaurant in Letterkenny as well at the time part-time, and Dad had suffered a brain hemorrhage many years previous to that, and he was visiting his rehabilitation office, which would have been the old NRB office on Port Road, and the manager down there on one of Fenton's meetings down happened to mention to Daddy, God, we need a cleaner for the office, you don't know anyone. And Dad was like, I do know the very woman, surely. He volunteered her. So that's kind of where that first contract came from. And then I suppose the idea was seeded at that stage. And then they decided to look for more work and advertise for work. And it became, very busy. You know, there was an opening there. There was other cleaning companies established within Donegal at that point. We weren't the first by any means, but I suppose we just were fortunate with our timing.
Okay. Any one big contract or any one big thing that stands out in the early days in it, or was it a sort of gradual build?
A contract very early on. So within the first month or so, the opportunity just arose for Fintan to have a conversation with Dunn Stores here locally.
Okay.
And that contract was secured kind of really early on. So we went from having no employees to having 8 employees kind of overnight.
Okay.
Which was a massive learning curve, as anybody who hires staff will know. We didn't really have time to think about it. We didn't have time to be worried about it or to wonder, were we doing the right thing? It was just jump in with both feet, and that was it. We never looked back. So steadily it's growing, you know, through the years. We've had our ups and downs with staff numbers, I suppose. Kind of right up to 2007, we would have been up, I suppose, close between here and the company in Northern Ireland, closer to the 180 or 200 mark. And then obviously with the recession, all of that came back down again. But we're steadily going back again. So,
yeah. How have things been since March?
For me, very busy. Very busy. The company as a whole, I suppose, just to give you an insight into what the company structure looks like now, we're actually FM Services Group is the overall company, and within that there's several different businesses. One is FM Cleaning, which everyone knows.
Yep.
Cleaners and a Click would be the maid service, or the residential cleaning service, and then Bright Academy is the training side of the business.
Okay.
So we would actually train cleaning companies and cleaning professionals. And that side of the business is exceptionally busy at the minute, given the nature of what's going on. So while we've had a lot of staff out of work since March because businesses have closed, the parts of the business that are opened are still very busy. Thankfully, you know, we are still there and still operating. We've had quite a number of staff that have been operating on like key sites and essential sites over that whole period of March to now, and we definitely couldn't thank them enough. They've been outstanding, and they've been going out, I suppose, in much higher risk situations than they're used to, and providing the service that they do. We're very proud of them, extremely proud of them.
Look, with your list of services, there's a long list, but the COVID-19 services is one that stands out, obviously, at the top of that list now.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me a wee bit about that and how that has expanded and the demand for that, I'm sure, has grown in it over the last couple of months?
Well, I suppose, like, cleaning is one of those skill sets, I suppose, that doesn't become... It's not really a very important one until something like this happens, but within our industry... I mean, anyone who works in this industry and has done, they clean for health. That's our primary objective when we do our job. It's to make sure that the occupants of the building stay clean, they stay safe through the hygiene that's provided within that facility. So it's our role to make sure that people don't get sick in buildings, but this is taking on a whole different beast, I suppose. So, the services that we've provided kind of since March have changed. I suppose the buildings that are opened are now requiring infection prevention cleaning, and that's typically reserved for clinical settings normally, but we've had to bring those clinical practices and operations out to the rest of the world as such, or the rest of workplaces. So that's essentially what's happening in most businesses now, is it's infection prevention cleaning that we, infection control that we look at those principles and apply them to the cleaning practices that would be there's very much a lot of additional cleaning happening now. On top of that, then we've, I suppose, decontamination work that need to happen in the event that there's a suspected case or a confirmed case at a site. Then there's a whole different level of cleaning that's required at that stage to make the building safe again.
It's quite a responsibility.
It is, but again, I suppose we deal with pathogens and bugs and bacteria and all of that all the time. This is just a different one, and it's having an awful impact on the economy, and it's having an awful impact on businesses and organisations. But for us, I suppose this is just a different, it's just a different challenge that we have, or the work that we're doing. These principles and practices are not new to us. We just are usually dealing with them in clinical settings. We don't normally deal with them, for example, in your typical office or your shop. You don't ever have to deal with it in that regard normally. I suppose the one thing that did stand to us was we've been around during the H1N1 pandemic and the swine flu. We experienced both of those in our existence. So we weren't completely new to the whole process that would happen in the event that, you know, there was a public health emergency declared. We knew what was coming down the line. Once that, once the WHO pushed that button and said, right, okay, this is more serious and, you know, it needs a global response, we knew what to expect then in regards to the cleaning practices that would need to be put in place for buildings, the PPE, the shortages that might arise, you know. So we kind of had been through that back in 2009. So we knew what to expect there, and we were able to act very early in that regard, thankfully. So we, you know, we were well prepared.
Okay. The schools, I do know that they form a large part of your business, Annette, and I'm sure that's an area that you're looking with more than just a passing interest at the minute, to see how things unfold.
Yeah. I suppose that's a key piece in the whole economy. You know, if the schools are reopened and, you know, there's a very structured and safe response to the management of schools going forward. It means that there's other areas of society that can, and the economy, that can reopen again, because there is then somewhere for children to be during the day. Doing that safely and doing that responsibly is probably one of the most important things that we need to address. And I know the government would have issued guidelines there on Monday in this regard, and there's a lot of study and a lot of inspection of these, making sure that everyone's fully understanding of what's expected. And it's challenging for principals, it's challenging for people who work in schools to be able to interpret all this information and these regulations that they have to now put in place, as well as teach and as well as do their ordinary job. They have to bring in all of these new regulations as well. And the return to work safely protocol that was issued in May was no different for ordinary businesses. Well, you know, all businesses now had to take on this responsibility for protecting the health of their workers from COVID while they're at work and making our buildings COVID secure or COVID safe. And it's huge. It's a massive challenge for most businesses that, you know, they don't have the skill set within their own business. And there's very few people out there that provide this kind of assistance, yeah. I suppose, because it's brand new for us all.
Yeah. Given those circumstances, does that put more of an onus on yourself to be ready to be busier?
Yeah. That's the type of thing that we are kind of, that's where we're most busy at the minute, is providing assistance to businesses to help them to reopen safely and interpret, you know, the guidelines. Normally would be, I suppose they'd be worded in a way that is quite high, it's quite a high level to cover a multitude of industries and to cover a multitude of different types of jobs and settings. It has to be worded in a way that covers everything, but unfortunately that leaves it open to interpretation. So people are struggling to make sense of, you know, when they say, for example, social distance and at work, you know, what does that mean for my office or what does that mean for my school, or, you know, that hygiene controls need to be of a certain standard. Well, what exactly does that mean for my retail environment? Do I need to put in, you know, hand sanitizers, or do I need to provide additional cleaning staff on site? So we help them assess the risk within their business based on the type of work that they do, and then we help them to put a plan in place that actually makes them compliant with the guidelines for their specific sector. Okay. Yeah, so that side of it's very busy for us. And then I suppose in turn, the FM side, the cleaning side of the business obviously is very busy because of the nature of what's been asked from businesses and organisations and schools. There's a lot of extra cleaning required, right, you know, throughout all this. So yeah, thankfully, our businesses are quite busy at the minute.
Yeah, you mentioned places of study. I know we touched on it earlier when you were at the LYAT and studied electrical engineering. Mm. You went back there again then?
I did. One of the things I mentioned earlier was the recession. And I suppose for most businesses that have been around during that time and they've survived it and they've come out the other side, we're probably in the unique position where we've been through something of a substantial challenge already, and we know there's a resilience there within our organisations now that hopefully we'll survive this one as well. But as part of that recession process that our business went through, we went through 4 or 5 years of very, very challenging times. And towards the end of that, it was kind of very, for want of a better word, it was touch and go whether or not we would actually survive or not. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to try and give myself and the company the best chance, if I could take on new learning and new ways of doing things, that maybe we might be able to turn things around. And if not, maybe I might have something to fall back on. So I decided to go back to college, 2012, I think it was. And I studied a master's in innovation and leadership at LYAT as part of their business school. So I would highly recommend that course. It was one of the things that changed our business dramatically.
Was that a turning point in your own career?
Without a doubt, yes. It was a lot of self-reflection and a lot of learning over that 2 or 3 year period. You just understood, I suppose, that you didn't know everything. You were made aware of what you didn't know, first of all, which was quite a lot. And I would have been of the opinion prior to that, maybe, that I knew more than I thought I did. Do you know, that kind of way? But it definitely was a very steep learning curve, and it was challenging. It was a very hard thing to do, to do a master's and run a business that was struggling. You know, it wasn't like I could afford to take the time off to, you know, work at my studies two or three days a week. I was running a very busy business as well, as most of the participants were. They were in busy jobs. But the sense of accomplishment when you completed that and you were able to graduate, and that was very powerful, that day of graduation. But the learning that I have been able to apply to our business then has been just phenomenal. The amount of improvements that we've been able to make as a result of the learning that happened on that master's programme has totally transformed our business.
Having spoken to you in the past, Annette, about business, the one thing you did say to me was that nobody has the passion or the understanding of the business more than the person who owns the business. And I think that's a view you still hold very, very strongly to.
I do. I suppose with any small business, I suppose the person that has set, with any business, the person that establishes the business and helps it through its infancy and helps it to survive those first few years, the critical few years, there's a passion there and a drive there from that person that wouldn't ever normally be replicated by other people within the organisation. Now, that's not to say that you'll grow and expand an organisation without a team, you know, but as something that I kind of learned, and it was part of the Masters, actually, that I would have had very, very high expectations of everyone that worked in our organisation. The expectations were too high. I was expecting them to care and put in the effort to our business that I put in every day, or that maybe mum and dad put in, and it was a very unrealistic thing for me to do, you know. And I think that's one of the things that I see, you know, I coach a lot of business owners in this field, and I suppose I see this repeating itself quite a lot, where people nearly they expect other people within their organisation to feel as passionately or to work as passionately in the business as they did. And I suppose that's not realistic either for most people to be able to have that level of drive when it's not their business. You know, at the end of the day, you can set the bar very high and expect maybe 80 or 90% and that you're doing well at that, but no one will ever give it the 100 hours a week and the, you know, the weeks of going where you don't get paid and all of that sort of stuff that a business owner goes through in the early stages of a business. I don't think it would be fair to expect anybody else to do that, really. But that's one of the lessons that I learned as part of the Master's program, was I did have those expectations of people, and I did, I suppose, make bad decisions down the years because I had those extremely high, unrealistic expectations of people. But again, I suppose, you know, in order for a business to grow and in order for, to develop skills and to develop services and stuff, you absolutely need other people on the bus. You need other mindsets, and you need people with different skills, and you need different viewpoints. Otherwise, you know, your business won't grow. You start to develop like a groupthink thing where everyone thinks the same, and if no one's there to challenge that and no one's there to bring fresh ideas, then the business won't innovate and it won't grow. So it's important to have both, but just be realistic, I suppose, with the expectations, not to be expecting too much of people.
Okay. Annette Houston, Managing Director of FM Services Group, thanks for joining us on Business Matters this morning.
Thank you.
This is Business Matters podcast on Highland Radio. Thanks again to Annette Houston. In our second piece, we travel to Inishowen and the town of Kildaff. I spoke to Johnny McGuinness of McGuinness's Bar about the impact COVID-19 has had on pubs like his own. Johnny, Friday afternoon in Kildaff Main Street. I'm just looking out the window here. Bit of rain. I'm looking across the Kildaff Arms. Still closed as well, like your own establishment, McGuinness's Pub.
Unfortunately, yeah. We're all closed, waiting for further instruction from the government when we can open up. We hope that it comes sooner rather than later, to be honest with you. We were ready to go last week and had the carpet pulled from under us at the last minute, so we're not quite sure when we're going to get the go-ahead.
How frustrating has that been, Johnny? Waiting, obviously, for the date to open and then at the last minute being pulled.
It is frustrating. Now, I have to say, we weren't surprised because up until the day before, we haven't received any sort of direction from anybody as to what's expected from us, in the safety, in view of keeping our customers safe or our staff safe or anything like that. We have been carrying out a lot of work ourselves cosmetically within the building, and we've done up a lot of the floors and furniture and stuff like that, and just given ourselves a bit of a makeover in general. But as far as putting in precautionary measures, we don't know what we have to put in place nor do we have even staff in place, nor even stock in the premises. So it wasn't possible for us to open up even on that date without some, I suppose, better notification, anyone in a timely fashion, to give us a chance to get ready for business.
In terms of the government guidelines and the help and support that people like yourselves have received so far, how have you found that?
There's been mixed signals there. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, and it seems to be changing on a daily basis. At the moment, I guess we were sort of preparing for, you know, keeping people 2 meters apart. Luckily enough, we have a large beer garden at the back, and further on down the yard, we have a large garden as well. So we were planning to put picnic tables down there, and that's how we were going to deal with the social distancing aspect. We have all the PPE in place, and we have the hand sanitizer here. We haven't had our staff trained yet, because obviously we haven't got that direction from government yet as what's expected of us. But I mean, at the moment, we've prepared as well as we can with the information that we've been given, but there is a lot of frustration, because we should have definitive guidelines in place immediately for whenever the date of a reopening takes place.
Typically at this time of year, could you paint the picture of what a normal Friday would be like towards the end of July in the summertime in Kildaff and in McGuinness's pub?
Getting into the end of July, there'll be a lot of people going on holidays. A lot of the working men would be taking their holidays now for the next couple of weeks. So it would have been a very busy day. There would have been tourists coming in from Northern Ireland and the UK and further afield. There would have been a buzz about the village. All the accommodation would be full to capacity. There just would have been a great vibe, and we would have had a full weekend's entertainment laid on with music, and we would have been expecting to have a bumper weekend, which we badly require at this time of year to try and get us through those quiet months of the winter. So it's a very sad state of affairs. You know, when we compare this to years gone by, we should be really doing the business now at this moment in time, and we're not.
Yeah, just think of 2 years ago, the Irish Open in Ballyliffin. I'm sure you got a bounce in 2018, and I'm sure in 2019, and hoping to get another bounce this year.
Well, there was a bit of momentum going there, and Inishowen was doing very well. Donegal as a whole was doing very well on the tourism side of things. The golf was a fantastic achievement, and it was very well run, and it was a credit to all involved. We've got so much to offer here in Kildaff with the Blue Flag Beach, the harbour there, and we have the chartered boats going out of Bunagee, and we have the chartered yacht going out of there also. There's many, many attractions in the area, and really and truly, like, the pub is a big part of that. And at the moment, there are tourists around, not as many, but I feel like their experience is probably of much lesser degree than what it should be. You know, people should be having the ability to go into their local pub and you know, have a couple of pints and still remain safe. We can provide a safe environment for anybody, just as good as any of the other businesses in the area.
In terms of not being able to open because you don't share food, how does that rest with you compared to somebody up the road, for example, that is able to open because they sell food?
We've thought about this long and hard, and we thought, does it make sense to even to try and have a food offering? But at the moment, we're not kitted out for that. We haven't been. And really and truly, you know, a country pub loses a certain atmosphere once you go down the road of serving food. You know, you cease being, you know, a place to come and meet and talk and have the crack and listen to music. It becomes a little more sterile then in the environment where you're serving food. You tend to lose a lot of the atmosphere. So we'd be reluctant to go down that route, but we're not ruling it out at this moment in time. If it's something we have to do to survive and get the doors open, then, you know, maybe it's something we'll have to consider.
Yeah. Open the doors, that first happened here back in 1792.
Well, I was off that day myself, so I'm not quite sure who was working that shift, but the place has been around for quite some time, and we were selling tea and fertilizer and sugar and everything else back then. Now we're selling maybe a few more colourful cocktails. Yeah. And
just look at the hooks on the wall, Johnny. That was where fish was hung back then.
Yeah, we hung the fish here, and I wasn't part of that now. There were no barcodes or pricing guns back then. But my good neighbour, Jerry Davenport, I think, tells me he remembers it very well. So maybe you can ask him whenever you see him again.
The pub culture has changed, and the pub setting has changed in the last number of years. It's a challenging time before COVID-19. How challenging is it going to be now once you do get open again, Johnny?
Well, that's the million-dollar question at the moment. Everybody's trying to, you know, plan for the future. But unfortunately, when there's such uncertainty, we don't really know what direction we're going to have to go in order to survive, never mind remain to be profitable. At this moment in time, we're just hunkering down, preparing for an eventual reopening and hoping that it's not as bad as what we're being led to believe. You know, this COVID-19 isn't going away anytime soon, so we're going to have to learn to live with it, I suppose. And whatever that entails, we'll just have to adapt and hopefully preserve our business there and strive to try and build it up again in the future.
You mentioned the passing tourist trade. Obviously, you're on the Inishowen 100 and you're also on the Wide Atlantic Way, which are two massive benefits to your business and where you are.
Well, we're very lucky to be on both, thankfully. And the Wide Atlantic Way has been a tremendous success for all the businesses either on or in proximity to the route. Inishowen has had the Inishowen 100, and it's in my opinion, probably even more spectacular because it's some of the roads are whilst they mightn't be passable by coach or bus or motorhome, they're fantastic for anyone driving in a car or on a motorbike or cycling or running or whatever they may be. So we're spoiled for choice here at the moment. We've got so much to offer on the peninsula, and it's just unfortunate that we can't promote ourselves and we can't, you know, put in the effort to even bettering the product that we have going forward at this minute in time where everything's just at a standstill.
But the business has been handed down from generation to generation. I'm sure that's something you take great pride on and carrying that business on, Johnny.
Well, I'd be very happy to do that. Now, this is my father's business, so at the minute, I hope that I can continue to preserve the business that he's cultivated over the years and strive to grow the business even more. But it would be an honour to do that. And it's a great responsibility to be given. But it's something that I would relish, and it's something that I hope comes to fruition in the future.
John McGuinness of McGuinness's Bar in Kildaff, thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
Thank you very much for having me, Kieran. Appreciate it.
That was John McGuinness of McGuinness's Bar in Kildaff. That's it for another edition of Business Matters. I'd like to thank my guests, John McGuinness and Annette Houston. I'd like to thank Joe Dex and Sound. And before I finish, I would like to leave you with a few quotes that Johnny gave us in relation to what he termed a new epidemic.
In answering your question as to what we missed the most over the last number of months while we've been closed, I'd have to say that it's the fun, the banter, the crack, the laughter, the song. It's the camaraderie between the customers and the staff. It's the friendships that have been lost, or at least curtailed and restricted over that period of time. And we must be cognizant of the fact that there's a new epidemic coming very quickly, and that's an epidemic of loneliness. And it's time to let the local pub reopen again and provide that safe environment for people to come and have those friendships and have those experiences and share in that laughter in a safe environment that we can all provide in your local pub.